Hello and welcome to the Financial Markets Insights in Conversation with podcast series. Joining me today is Mike Burton, founder and CEO of Quorum 15, the cross-asset, cross-industry forum that brings together financial market participants from both the buy and sell side to drive positive change in global financial markets. Quorum is celebrating its 17th anniversary this year and today has more than 250 active participants from banks, financial firms, trading platforms, service providers, regulators and industry associations actively contributing to 30-odd meetings every year in Europe, the US and Asia. Welcome, Mike. Talk to us a bit more about how Quorum 15 came about.
Hi, Tina, and thanks for having me on your podcast today. Quorum 15, I might step back a little bit and give you a bit of history as to how Quorum 15 formed. And I'll go back to saying that I was actually born in the UK, but when I was quite young, I went to Australia and I was raised in Sydney, where my family are. And then when I came for the usual working holiday that a lot of Australians do, I ended up staying in the UK longer than I had anticipated. I did a lot of traveling. And also during that time, I was regional manager for the Nordic countries. So I spent quite a bit of time commuting weekly to places like Reykjavik and Stockholm and Copenhagen and Oslo and also Helsinki. So I've been a bit of a wanderer, which I think is a trait that a lot of Australians have, probably from being so far away from the rest of the world. But it's fair to say in the last 20 years, I've been most heavily involved in trading and risk management software in the city. So my clients have always been in Square Mile or Canary Wharf, etc. And I think where the turning point came was at some point I was working for an Australian company. A lot of people didn't really know who they were, and I wanted to make sure I understood where the fit was between what they were doing in Australia and what we wanted to do in the UK. So I decided to start bringing people together at the Coq d'Argent rooftop restaurant in London. And I inherently thought that people are just naturally curious about other people, and that was just a really nice way to do business before the day got going at 9 o'clock. So it was literally a corner table of about 10 people with a common thread there talking about business. And I did soon find out that you would have conversations where people would say things like, oh, so it's like that at your place too. I thought we were the only ones. And that's how it started to form. I just like the idea of bringing people together in conversation. And then at some point, that Australian company led me to going on an Australian trade mission to Eastern Europe, where I was there with about five or six other Australian CEOs. And I witnessed firsthand how difficult it was for them to try and incubate business in Europe so far from home, being on conference calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then at the Polish Bankers Association, listening to a translator at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that led to my starting a company called Offshore Sales Limited to help people far from Europe, because I'd had so much extensive experience in the UK and Europe. I thought I could probably help them in that incubation period, represent them, get conversations set up, and even help them to recruit the right kind of people because they were so far from home. And that's what really started Offshore Sales Limited, was the precursor to Quorum 15. And then a company that I had been working for earlier had a new CEO who wanted to talk to me about what I was doing differently. And I think ultimately she wanted to employ me, but I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to develop my sales and marketing company. And one thing I said to her was, I found the network breakfast meetings were really, really helpful. And at that time, the Gherkin was just opening to the public. And she said, where would you like to do them? And, you know, can you represent us? So I took them on as a client. I had a former CEO of an Australian mortgage company as a client. And so I was looking after them and I was using breakfast meetings on the 38th floor of the Gherkin. And that company dealt with heads of middle office for program trading systems. And in the conversations I was having at the Gherkin, quite often they were saying, our biggest problem is the buy side, because the buy side, you know, they don't understand. We're working very late at night. We're putting in big budgets and they're not. And I thought, wow, you sound really unhappy with your clients. So I thought, I'm going to have an agenda called Middle Office, a Buy Side Perspective. And so I invited a head of operations from the buy side from a very large asset management company. And during that meeting, at one point, because they were still complaining a bit, which surprised me, I thought they'd be quite polite with him, but it was all good-hearted, and I made a joke about a lion's den, etc. And at that point, he said, "I'm sure if five or six of my peers were with me here today, they'd pretty much say the same thing as I'm saying. We're not that precious, and we probably want 90% the same thing." And I thought that was very interesting. And then I did it again with middle office or front office perspective, because they were, you know, unhappy with the front office throwing all the deals over the wall for them to process. And a very similar story, really. And so I just parked that idea. And then the CEO asked me to go to Trade Tech one year because I'd been there before when I worked for the firm. And so I went there. And for some reason, people forgot who I was working for, but they associated me with the network breakfast. I was the network breakfast guy. And it's a part of the job that I really enjoyed doing. So I was being invited to some little satellite meetings around Paris in private dining rooms. And I noticed how incredibly candid and relevant the conversation was. If you wanted a barometer reading of what was going on in the markets, it wasn't in the auditorium. And I thought, I really love doing this anyway. There seems to be a need. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody, in addition to all the networking, which is a very necessary and important part of the business, wouldn't it be nice if somebody just created a company that was all about that side meeting and brought people together? And I think that is quite a long-winded way of explaining it, but really that's what formed my opinion on what Quorum 15 should be.
So I think I love it, the breakfast guy, the breakfast meeting guy. You're making some very good points. Obviously, you and I have both been around a long time and we've both been at other people's events. You've mentioned Trade Tech. There's also obviously industry associations. I think it is a very important point, and we'll just come on to that, that even with those, you might, even if you're a company or an industry association, you still might only have a couple of these events a year. And that's a long time between events. And I think you also make a very good point about the best conversations are probably not coming out in the auditorium where the sell side is telling the buy side what it has for them. And the buy side is in a listening role. Equally, I think the key, and perhaps we're going to come on to that now, is that you have this regular cadence of these meetings. You have a number of forums and you meet regularly. So let me take you in that direction if I can, Mike.
Yeah, certainly. And that is incredibly valid, because what I did at some point several months later, when I thought I could make this a reality, I thought, how am I going to make it work? And the first thing I thought is, first of all, the numbers should be broadly equal between the buy and sell side, because some of these conferences are very top heavy with vendors and broker dealers and not so much with the buy side. So Quorum 15 was actually bringing 8 sell side and 7 buy side together. They were the 15. In my mind's eye, I thought that was the ideal number to bring them together. It had to be under Chatham House rule so that people could speak confidently that they were in a trusted environment. And rather than have the annual meetings, I wanted to have a quarterly approach to our meetings. And that way you could, if there was carryover and that something was unresolved in one particular breakfast meeting, then you could continue it over to the next one, or you could just have a number of different flavors. But I like that quarterly rhythm as well. So that's how I started. On the 7th of March, 2008, I started my first meeting of 15. It was the London Equity Trading Quorum, and it was very well received. And after a while, word got round that that was quite a successful format. And we actually had to form a second equity trading quorum later that year, because a few people who were doubters all of a sudden thought, oh, this is a good thing to belong to, which was great. And in between, we also did a fixed income quorum in London. So it started off quite well there. But one thing that I did, which even today people will raise an eyebrow at, is I thought, if you are going to have the buy side and the sell side around a table, they need to be equally committed to that conversation, because for too long, people have been conditioned to this kind of sponsor-led approach, and the buy side, therefore, by default, with the people being sold to. And I wanted to break that mentality and have the buy side there as equal stakeholders, talking about the topics that they shared in common and breaking down the barriers of what was really a buy side heavily represented by the Investment Management Association, as it was back then, the IA today, and the sell side was represented by its own association, AFME. And it almost felt like they were driven apart in some ways, because that's the buy side view, that's the sell side view. And so I had a membership fee for all model with no sponsorship whatsoever. And I wanted to completely remove this whole sponsorship monetary value to that and have people coming together as willing parties, trying to look at the bigger picture and identify areas of consensus which could lead to positive change.
To that end, you've started with, you said, the London Equity Trading Quorum and the London Fixed Income Trading Quorum. But obviously, the success of that then spawned the matching set, if you like, of the meetings that mirror those in Asia and in the US, which is obviously very valuable because you've got people, you talk about skin in the game, but you've got people on the ground who actually are talking specifically about local or regional challenges, which aren't necessarily shared globally. Equally and oppositely, of course, I know because I attend quite a lot of those, thank you. You have things that are generically global, like foreign exchange and digital assets. And so over time, in your 17 years, you've now represent all the asset classes and you do have events around all of the regions to enable people on the ground to contribute to debates that are particularly relevant to them.
Yes, that's a very important part of it. And I should have said earlier that another key tenet of Quorum 15 was that the content should be the content our members wanted to talk about and wasn't in any way sponsorship-led. So we created an advisory board for every quorum that we did. That was initially two buy-side and two sell-side, working out what the topic should be for the other 11 people around the table. But over time, as the size of Quorum 15 has grown a little, we typically would be 20 to 25 people now, but still in small enough numbers for that to be really interactive. And again, that trusted environment. Our advisory boards have grown to, you know, up to 8 people, but again, keeping it very much buy and sell side focused. So when I started to ask the people in the UK, do you think your counterparts in New York would like that? They said, yes, let me put you in touch with them. And then that started another round between 2010 and 2011. So we had US equities and US fixed income. And then in 2011, I started to take that out to Asia as well. And we had Hong Kong equities and fixed income. And we also had Sydney equities as well, which is a funny story because I remember I started the equity quorum in Asia in May 2011. And then I booked my travel onwards to Sydney to find out where we should do fixed income. And they said, but what about equities? And I said, no, we've got that already for APAC. It's in Hong Kong. And they said, no, we need one in Sydney. We don't have anything like this. And that led to Quorum 15 Sydney being established. So when I went back 3 or 4 months later to do the next quarter, I did the Hong Kong Equity Quorum. And then I went on and did our very first Sydney Equity Trading Quorum as well.
Since we're talking about a nice segue there, Asia Pacific, one of the things we'd like to touch upon is that the not just the fact that you're creating a forum where you get a safe space where people can have open discussions, both by and sell side, sharing common themes. But it would be fair to say that you are, over the years, you've become an industry driver of change. And one of the examples I'd like to talk to you about today is what's happened most recently in terms of your influencing role, which is that you've been very engaged with India's Securities and Exchange Board to support a market consultation on the introduction of closed auctions in its equities market. Are you able to tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, I think I can in general terms, although it is still ongoing. But funnily enough, that actually harks back to when I started in Hong Kong with the equity quorum there. One of the key topics that people wanted to talk about very quickly, as I said, I did our first quorum in May. And by the end of that, 2011, and by the end of that year, people were very vexed about the fact that the Hong Kong exchange had booted out the closing auction mechanism there because of people arbing certain stocks and shares, and it was just deemed to be a very bad thing. But actually, a closing auction mechanism is a good thing. A badly designed closing auction mechanism is a very bad thing. And so we started a very long journey with the Hong Kong Exchange to reintroduce the closing auction there, which took us about 5 years, but eventually it was reintroduced. And it was because of that series of events, so I'm told, it was because of that series of events that we were asked to be involved in putting together a proposal for a closing auction in India with SEBI. And we're fortunate enough to have really, really fantastic people everywhere in the world. But in Asia Pacific, we formed an executive committee comprised of BlackRock and Vanguard on the buy side, and Bank of America, Citi, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, and UBS on the sell side. And they were very keen that this should not come from any particular industry association on either the buy side or the sell side, but it should come through this neutral avenue through Quorum 15 that was not axed on either side, but again, to areas of consensus across the aisle. This is something that the industry needs, not the needs of one particular industry group. So they felt that would be very, very powerful. And we had our first executive committee meeting on the 9th of January, 2024, so 13 months ago. And we decided that our approach should be highly consultative. It should be industry-wide, that we should keep our colleagues in the buy-side and sell-side industry associations informed of what we were doing along the way. It wasn't intended to be elitist in any way. And that we should also be quite inclusive when it comes to the exchanges that would have to deal with any regulation that was imposed upon them. And we felt it was very important to get buy-in from them also. So we've been meeting fortnightly quite a lot last year, which led to a discussion document that we presented initially to the BSE and the NSE, the two exchanges who are going to be affected by this, to win their hearts and minds, really, about this isn't just something being imposed on, you know, by Westerners to India. India is a unique market. It's a fantastic, fast-growing market, and it's going to be one of the most dynamic and interesting places in the world over the coming decades. So we really wanted to have that empathy, and it worked very well because they really did open their minds up to what it was that we were saying, which is not to say there weren't contraviews towards that as well, but the level of experience that we had in the executive committee, we could pull out charts and we could give examples and we could use data-driven examples of why this really is a good thing to do. And if an exchange doesn't have a closing auction mechanism, the spreads are far wider than if they do have that mechanism. And so having gone through the BSE and the NSE, we eventually then presented that proposal to SEBI and with the desire of having a consultation paper. And in December, just gone, SEBI produced a consultation paper. And now we're still meeting, just providing some more evidence-backed data to ensure that SEBI has done all of their due diligence. And then if they do decide to introduce it, which we sincerely hope they will, then they'll have done all their due diligence as well. So we're trying to be there to help them make the right decision.
I think importantly there, so effectively, almost a year exactly then from your first discussions through to their December 2024 production of the consultation paper. And by financial market standards, that's pretty speedy, isn't it, in terms of from debate to action to industry consultation to ultimately a decision?
Yes, totally. I think it took us over 5 years to get it through the first time. And it might be a combination of we'd been there before and we knew what we were doing and we knew what the arguments and where the resistance may come from, but also the market just getting more and more sophisticated as well along the way.
It's actually quite timely talking about increasing sophistication of a market. If one of the other things, and I know again, because I've had the pleasure of joining the most recent debate, is one of your global forum is the digital quorums. And recently I was fortunate enough to join an event to hear the personal insight, the insights of a member of the staff of the CFTC, Josh Beal, who's senior counsel to Commissioner Mercinger. Just 8 days into the new US administration. And I know we can't talk in detail about what was discussed, but can you give us a bit of a flavor about how that came about? Because I think it's actually a precedent for other meetings as well, where you quite often have a regulator or an industry overseer in your meetings, giving, you know, literally hot off the press information.
Yes, we were very fortunate that our invitation had been accepted at a time when the administration had just changed. This meeting took place on the 28th of January, so this was day 8 of the new administration. And although I can't go into detail, what I can tell you is that the CFTC, or Josh in particular, was very forthright and helpful during that meeting. What we wanted to do was get an indication of a direction of travel that perhaps encountered less headwinds and started to maybe pick up a few tailwinds from what had been going on before. because a lot of our members were quite envious of overseas. A lot of our US members were quite envious of the regimes in terms of regulation in other parts of the world, and they were feeling a little bit sore about that. But there is a degree of optimism about the future for digital and crypto assets in the United States. I would also add that the FCA is a permanent member of our Digital Asset Forum. We've been fortunate enough in Quorum 15 over the years to have incredible relationships with the FCA, with HM Treasury, and even overseas in Australia with ASIC, with the SFC in Hong Kong, with the CFTC and the SEC in the US. And I think that's because they trust us. They quite like that environment. So it was a fantastic meeting. I was very happily surprised that we managed to get that meeting so soon. In June, I think it's the right time for us to go out to the US and maybe go to Washington, D.C. and get both the CFTC and the SEC around that table, with the FCA coming in on Zoom as well, because I want to increasingly get more regulators together. You know, a lovely thing that happened in that meeting that we had on the 28th of January was to see the relationship that's seen between the FCA and the CFTC and wanting to stay in touch with one another and connecting them and things like that. I thought that was great. We've been lucky enough to have Commissioner Caroline Pham come over to the UK and managed to get a meeting in at the end of a very, very busy day with our members. We've had Commissioner Mercinger from the CFTC also join us in the US. So we've got a really good relationship with those people, but I think it can be very, very powerful to bring various regulators from different parts of the world together. I know they talk to one another and they're all part of IOSCO, but it is a very different dynamic to have that more intimate meeting. So that's what we're planning to do.
I think that's fantastic. And I think, to your points, in the same way as having the buy and the sell side in the same space talking openly, having regulators hearing it again from the horse's mouth from both sides of the equation is very valuable to them. Because otherwise, as you've said, it can be channeled through either a sell side or a buy side forum that evidently will have its own driving agenda. Talking about that type of activity and influencing, another thing I know that Quorum 15 has become very engaged with, not recently, but more recently in terms of the activities that you've had, which is in looking at the challenges of diversity and inclusion in financial markets, particularly. I think we can all agree that certainly those of us have been around a very long time, that financial markets are still somewhat behind the curve with respect to embracing true diversity in the workplace. So would you like to talk to us a bit about what you've been doing at Quorum 15 to keep that debate fresh?
We have a compliance quorum, and our advisory board in the compliance quorum, when deciding what topics we should be talking about next, one of the ladies in there who worked on the life floor in the 80s was just recalling how terrible it was back then. And I'm sure we've all seen the films and know what it was like back there on the trading floor for women. But the question was then raised, how far have we really evolved since then? Or do people just know which boxes to tick when they're filling out the compliance forms? And I know that was an intentionally glib comment, and we've come a long way since then. But how are we doing as an industry? You know, could we be doing better? And so I really wanted to come at that from the point of view of being positive, being inspirational in a way. I thought I wanted to get these women who were doing an incredible job in industry, and we're fortunate enough to have quite a lot of them in Quorum 15, together to do a mark-to-market on where we are in terms of gender diversity and behavior in the workplace. And in terms of inspiration, about 3 years ago, a US Equity Quorum advisory board decided, and I think they were just maxed out with regulation and reading 1600 page papers, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, why don't we use the power that we've got around the table to get really inspirational speakers to come along, instead of talking about, you know, microstructure issues that we hear about every other day. So that led to us inviting a company called Academy Securities. And we had General Spider Marks, who appears on CNBC News quite a bit in connection with various wars that are going on. And at the time, it was before the Russian-Ukraine war had broken out, when he agreed to come. And by the time he actually came to the meeting, it actually had broken out a couple of days before. So the timing was impeccable. And through that connection with Academy Securities, they support the Veterinary Association and they recruit retired generals and colonels, and they have a very strong military connection. And through that, we were introduced to Rachel Washburn. Now, Rachel spent 6 years on active duty as an intelligence officer deploying twice in Afghanistan. She was a pioneer in the cultural support team and an intelligence platoon leader. So Rachel, having done two tours of duty in Afghanistan, including being dropped into Afghan villages and training Afghan women, I thought, what an inspirational person. She actually has a Bronze Star from her service in Afghanistan. And Rachel then said, well, why don't you invite Janie to come along? Because Janie Mines was the first African-American woman to graduate from the U.S. Naval Academy. She held senior positions as a naval officer and also in the commercial world with Procter & Gamble, Pepsi, Hershey Foods, Bank of America, including negotiating deals in excess of $10 billion. So this is a very exceptional person. She also is the author of a book called No Coincidences, Reflections of the First Black Female Graduate of the United States Naval Academy. So I thought, let's make this inspirational. Let's celebrate instead of complain. And people, their mouths were just open with just, you know, in awe of what these people were saying. So it led to a fantastic meeting. And we put feedback out there to say, would you like this to develop into an actual quorum? Or was this just a nice experience? And the overwhelming feedback was, we would really like to put something together where we've got pragmatic steps to really move the dial in the industry. So that's something we're going to be doing in 2025.
I was lucky enough to join that quorum, so I know how fantastic it was and how literally awe-inspiring the two speakers were, the two ladies were. Can I emphasize here, however, this was not an all-female audience. Very carefully so, it was an audience, the people who participated were both male and female. It was, to your point about them bashing any particular group or complaining, it was all about forward-looking, how do we do better? And it's actually quite timely to talk about the fact that that's potentially a new quorum for Quorum 15 going forward. Are there any other plans that you have for 2025 and beyond to expand the fora or the quorums that you have?
Yes. In addition to that, one of the things that happened at our 3rd of July event in 2024 was we had a fixed income primary markets brunch. And that was born out of previous fixed income quora, where people were seeing the electronification of the secondary markets progressing, but recalling in 2014 where people were talking about the processes around the issuance of bonds being electronified, and then in 2024, 10 years later, not seeing as much evidence as they would like. So that is one quorum that we are going to launch in 2024.
Thanks, Mike, for talking about one of the quorums that are definitely going to be created. And you also mentioned that the outcome of the discussions on gender equality is that there may well be a new quorum for diversity in financial markets. Do you see that happening?
Yes, I do. The feedback has been very positive after we held that meeting in January. And people would really like to have a pragmatic quorum, realistic outcomes with firms who are represented by the people who are in that initial quorum being involved in the process as well and seeing how we can move the dial to make a positive effect on that. So it's not going to be a quarterly one. We're planning to do one in May 2025, and then we'll have our annual network reception on the 2nd of July, and then we'll plan to do one in October, November. So, you know, one before, maybe use the annual network reception as a panel discussion to spread the word to a wider audience, because typically we have an order of magnitude more people come to our annual summer reception than come to our individual tables. So instead of having 18 to 20, we have 180 to 200 people at the annual network reception. So we want to get that word out. And that's also kind of a segue to something else that's happened over the last year or two as well, when you're talking about our plans for 2025. One of the things, going back to the US Equity Quorum, where they wanted to use the horsepower around the table to get really interesting people, and I mentioned Academy Securities, we also had macroeconomic economists covering the meteoric rise of India and what's going on in China. And another topic was Gentelligence. And we managed to get the author of a book called Gentelligence, Dr. Megan Gerhardt. And Gentelligence, by the way, is generational intelligence. And it's quite funny because when we're talking about gender diversity and we're talking about generational diversity, the one common thread is that the companies that embrace those differences and use them to the best of the ability of those individual generations or individual genders, or even you could talk about neurodiversity. The companies that do that are the ones that really, really flourish. And from the US Equity Quorum again, where we had Dr. Megan Gerhardt talk about that, people were fascinated enough for us to invite her to come virtually to our annual network reception and have a panel discussion about that. And it was very, very well received. And then last year, we also had Kay Swinburne from the House of Lords get together with the chairman and founder of Signum Global Advisors, Charles Myers, flew out from the US for our meeting on the Wednesday. I think he'd been at the Biden fundraiser on the Friday before that weekend to give us a top-down view on the elections that obviously have been and gone now in November, but talking about the predictions, but talking about the interaction with other regions in the case of a Biden win or a Biden-Harris win or a Trump win, and how that was going to interact with Europe and how that was going to interact with the UK. So we had Kay Swinburne giving a UK-European perspective, and we had Charles Myers giving a US perspective. And, you know, we had the market structure panels in the early afternoon, and then we had a break. And then after the break, we went from kind of market specific to industry curious topics that everybody was fascinated about. And the feedback from those last two panels, Gentelligence and the US-UK election special, was absolutely fantastic. But we do a lot more with our industry curious topics and speakers, which I personally love and our members seem to like as well. And I would also say that digital assets now has become the third biggest quorum we have after equities and fixed income as well. So with the new administration and hopefully some tailwinds replacing headwinds, I think there's going to be a lot of development over the next, we're not talking about months, but we're definitely talking about years where the outlook is far more positive. So I think the future is very, very good for us.
In terms of your annual events, I imagine it would be just as timely to repeat that Anglo-US discussion, given that there have been two administration changes in the UK and in the US. It would seem a very good thing to revisit, given it's just been a year and an enormous amount has changed.
Yes, if you read the headlines every single day, it is a very, very volatile situation. I always thought of the VIX as relating to volatility in shares. I think it's now gone to politics because there's a huge volatility going on politically in terms of expectations, what's happening next, alliances, things that people took for granted, they can no longer take for granted. So I was thinking that very same thing, Tina, this morning when I woke up, thinking about the annual reception. It'll be a summer reception again. It'll be on Wednesday, the 2nd of July this year. It'll again be at Stationers Hall. It is for members only. And that's one thing that Julie completely agrees with me.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time, Mike. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I'm sure we could talk for another hour. In terms of annual events, I think it's important that your audience, the podcast audience, understands that you are a membership organization. So, you know, there are plenty of other forums which might be open to anybody who wants to pay to attend. But in your case, the way to participate in this conversation, in the Quorum 15 conversation, is through membership. So I would encourage any listeners who are interested in what they've heard and want to participate in the Quorum 15 debate that this is a conversation that you should pick up with Mike. Thank you again, Mike, for your time today. It really is a pleasure always talking to you. And we hope to speak to you again very soon.
Thanks very much, Tina. It's been a pleasure.